not the EFL. It's the Football League podcast whipping up a storm, Debbie. Today, it's no longer Miller time for Matt. How's about Edwards for some start as Millwall boss? Leicester, blip or wobble? Preston's Lancashire pride? Posh's five-star rating? And Stag's stymie Salford? Hirings, firings and perspirings then. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. What a weekend we've had, gang, in the Football League. There's only two of us here to deal with it, though. Sam Parkin is en vacances in France, so it's me and Adrian Clark here to talk you through it all. How are you doing, Clarky?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, busy old weekend, but yeah, caught up with loads of the action and yeah, a few stories knocking around, some good performances, lots of goals. I think we'll be fine. I'm missing Sam, but I think we'll get through it.
A well-earned rest for him. I'm happy because it means that I'm the only panellist with a 100% appearance record on this podcast. We've got loads of news to get through. We'll roll through that as we go through the games here. Before we get into that, though, how about this? Our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers at sign-up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the podcast. It's 18+, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, we'll get into the championship next. And we'll start at Vicarage Road, where Watford's 5-0 pummeling of Rotherham proved the end for Matt Taylor. Here's a club statement. Rotherham United can confirm that the club have parted company with first-team manager Matt Taylor with immediate effect. He was appointed in October last year, guided the Millers to Sky Bet Championship survival in 2022-23, taking charge of 55 matches in total during his tenure. The 41-year-old was relieved of his duties on Monday. Leaves with our wholehearted thanks and best wishes for the future. Not sure it was necessary to put his age in there or the sponsor of the league, but it's pretty comprehensive, I suppose. Only two wins all season, Clarky. They did draw with Ipswich last week. Is it harsh? Is it fair?
I think it's harsh. I think this is... What do Rotherham expect, really, is the big question here. Because for my money, if they survive, that is the equivalent of getting into the playoffs, or, you know, at least it's like mounting a promotion challenge for most clubs in the division. It's a huge achievement because they don't have the budget. It's as simple as that. So, and are they cast iron certainties to go down this season? I wouldn't say so. I personally would have given Matt a lot longer. I like him. I'm a little bit biased because we've had him on our show and, you know, whenever I've met him, he's been very, very nice. And yeah, so we like him. But I also think he is a good manager that gets Rotherham, that knows that there's got to be a certain brand of football there, but he was trying to take it in a different direction, trying to progress it. And ultimately, it hasn't worked out for him. The one issue that has really cost Matt Taylor and Rotherham this season is goals. They don't carry much of a goal threat. And sounds funny when you have just drawn 2-2 against the Ipswich, high-flying Ipswich, but they haven't created enough. It's as simple as that. And by some distance, they've got the lowest expected goals in open play. Don't have, you know, they have the fewest shots in the division. And when I've seen them either live or on the telly, they have struggled to be creative. And I think maybe the feeling at board level was that, are we going to score enough goals to win enough matches to survive this season? And obviously they came to the conclusion that the answer was no. But yeah, I'm a little bit gutted for him because I think he's a really, really good coach. He'll pop up somewhere else. Someone else will snap him up.
Yeah, I saw somebody on Twitter saying can see him heading back to Exeter. That's maybe not the worst shout.
That's a good shout, yeah.
What about his replacement then? I automatically default to Warnock in all these kind of situations, but I'm just looking at the other runners and riders. Gary Rower, is he going to drop down to Rotherham? Maybe not. Chris Wilder, same. Carl Robinson and John Eustace, maybe more likely contenders.
Yeah, they're all good, aren't they? They're all really good managers, but it's not an easy gig. I think the chairman there, the owner, it's not the easiest to work with, and they're fighting against the odds, aren't they? It is survival. It's about survival, and yeah, survival football isn't that much fun, is it? You've got to be a certain type of manager, I think, to relish that kind of challenge and to back yourself, because how much higher can Rotherham be than where they are. I think the ceiling for Rotherham is mid-table championship, but I don't think they're going to achieve mid-table championship playing a swashbuckling brand of football, particularly not with the budget that they have. You know, they're going to have to be, you know, a mixture. You know, it's going to have to be direct. They're going to be great at set pieces. They're going to have to defend for their lives and put loads of men behind the ball. And, you know, that's not the job for every prospective head coach, is it? They wouldn't all fancy that. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see who they turn to. I mean, Wilder stands out because he's kind of local and has got a very good track record at every level, really, in the EFL. I just think he's a very, very good manager that shouldn't be out of work.
Yeah, and Sheffield United have picked up a bit, so he might not be going to get that job. We should give some love to Watford. Matt Taylor's probably not going to do that, but we can. Six unbeaten now after this thumping win. I think it's pretty telling that we're in the middle of November and we've hardly talked about them this season, because if nothing else, they've still got the same manager that they started with.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It all seems unusually stable, doesn't it, at Watford? What amazes me, really, is that Valerian Ismael appears to have ripped up his own coaching playbook and started again with something very different. This is a guy that's known for very direct football, set pieces, long throws, etc. Play the percentages, very high line with the press. Yet here we are, Watford, I think have the fourth most possession in the division. You know, 10 more teams in the Championship play more long passes than Watford per game. Yeah, they still press well and they've still got some of those characteristics. But yeah, he's, to his credit, shown that he's got more to his armory as a coach than to just play the way that we saw previously. So well done him. And I know a few Watford fans and they like it, and they think the team are doing okay. They're quite pleased with the progress of the side. Yasser Asprilla is a player I really like. I remember seeing him a couple of years ago and he impressed me. He's now more of a regular. And yeah, they're doing okay. I mean, in this match, it was about Ken Semmer down the left-hand side, sort of supplying all sorts of ammo for Rajovic up front. And that combination kind of put the game to bed. But yeah, they've got good players. And the manager is, you know, he's clearly very smart. And yeah, providing the ownership there don't get too twitchy, I think they're heading in the right direction. I can actually see Watford, the way that they're going, maybe stealing the last playoff spot or getting close to it by the end of this campaign.
Yeah, they're 5 points off it now. Good to see Tom Ince get a goal, if only because he's the most have a spell at Watford player ever, I think. So Matt Taylor's out. Joe Edwards is in at Millwall, and he might well have licked his lips when he realised his first assignment was going to be a trip to Hillsborough to take on hapless Sheffield Wednesday. Turned out to be a roaring win for the Lions, who gobbled up the Owls in the 37-year-old's first game in charge. I had a good chat on BBC London about this last week, Clarky. And the question that was put to me, obviously I know Joe a bit from his time at Chelsea, was, is he a fit for Millwall? And the answer to that is, on the face of it, probably not. But they want to go a different way, right? I think it's maybe easy to label him a kind of progressive, attractive football coach because of where he's come from, coming through the Chelsea Academy. But what he is a flexible, adaptable guy. He showed that when he mirrored his under-21s team at Chelsea to match Antonio Conte's 3-4-3 formation. At 37, you think, well, he's ridiculously young. He's been coaching since he was 16. So he's 20 years into his coaching journey. So obviously he's a rookie as a first team manager, but he's not come from absolutely nowhere. And what a way for him to start.
Yeah, dream start. Absolutely brilliant. You know him a little bit. I interviewed him earlier this year, had a real good, long, in-depth chat with him. And yeah, very impressive guy, really likable. And yeah, as you said, he's been coaching for so, so long. And he's been a number one, obviously at academy level, and been incredibly successful there, you know, with the youth team, with the under 21s, 23s. If you remember, he was the one who took Chelsea to the semi-finals of the EFL Trophy, where they narrowly lost to Lincoln.
Furthest any academy side's got in that competition. Exactly. That was in 2018.
Exactly, and he was the number one. He was the guy in charge. So he got so good that he then had to become part of a first team setup, of which he then had to take a backroom role. So yeah, I'd be excited if I was a Millwall fan. Obviously, on the back of this start, that's great news. I emailed him because I don't know him as such, but I thought I'll email him and say well done on getting the role, because we got on well. And straight away, emailed me straight back. Really appreciate it, Adrian. You know, it's all been a whirlwind, come about very quick. But I'm mega excited. So yeah. thanks for the best wishes, which I thought was typical of him, really. And I think he'll get on great with the players. They will like him. And they'll like the fact, I think, that he'll get them playing and he'll show confidence in them. I think the difference in this game at Hillsborough is that he had the centre-backs holding onto the ball a little bit longer, moving with it, you know, passing it progressively from the goalie sometimes as well. So he's going to bring in that and try and take it to the next level without obviously sacrificing what makes Millwall Millwall. So he'll find the right blend. I'm pretty sure of that. I enjoyed the way he sort of said that George Saville's goal, which was a great volley from outside the box. He said he's known him because he worked with him at Chelsea Academy, and he said, I've seen him score many goals. You know, I've not seen him score very many with his shin pad like that from outside the box, which I thought was a nice little put down. Just keeps his feet on the ground, doesn't it? But it shows that they can have a little bit of a laugh. Yeah, Millwall fans, I think, will like the football, and but it will solely be dependent on results, won't it? How it all pans out there. But yeah, I wish him well. Good guy next to him as well, Andy Myers.
Well, he'll provide the fight, won't he? Because Joe's not particularly demonstrative on the touchline, but Andy Myers very much is, and I guess that might appeal to Millwall supporters.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah, and they'll be all in on it. They'll be absolutely all in. And one thing that really stood out from my interview with him was talking about his experience at Everton, because he said, I'd been Chelsea. All I ever knew was Chelsea. Like, to work in a different environment where expectations are different, where you have to play a different style of football, where you have to dig in and grind out certain results and keep players happy after defeats a lot more often than you do at Chelsea, he said, was a massive learning experience that he'll obviously take into this job as well. So, yeah, I think he'll do well, but ultimately none of us know how it's going to progress. But I think they've chosen wisely.
Yeah, and he couldn't have had a better first game to get him going, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, shit for Wednesday. I mean, they are not good.
Leicester, what about them? Wobbling, blipping, call it what you will, but they've lost back-to-back league games for the first time this season. 1-0 at Middlesbrough. He's their only top on goal difference now. The inclination is to go to them because they're top of the league. I'm sure you'll pour some affection in the way of Borough as well, Clarkey. But was this just one of those days for Leicester? Because they had more shots, didn't they? They had more of the ball, just couldn't put it in. Dieng was pretty good in the Borough goal.
Yeah, I think it's a blippage for Leicester. Nothing more. They still play great stuff. Maybe the manager, you could argue, overthinking it a touch. He's worked with Pep a long time, and that must have rubbed off to a degree. We've seen him do some really unusual things that in the main have worked this season for Leicester. Having Casey McAteer at right back surprised me. So obviously you've got Ricardo, a right back in midfield ahead of him or on his inside. Then you've got Fatawu on the right wing as well. So they were all sort of jumbled around, and I don't think McAteer had the best game on his comeback from injury. I think he really is probably more effective in one of those wing positions. So that's, yeah, you might look at that. But yeah, in general, they played fine. It was just a case of, I mean, did you see the goal, Sam? Matt, did you see the goal, Matt? I mean,
I think it's the first time I've ever seen it where ref blows up too quickly rather than playing advantage. Crowd, manager, absolute uproar. And then the free kick gets stuck in the top corner and everybody says, what a terrific decision that was, referee.
Exactly. It was, I had exactly the same thing written down here. And Sam Greenwood, obviously, is a Leeds player. So that's a big, big goal for his parent club as well, isn't it? So that was a double whammy from him. Magnificent execution, one of the best free kicks I've seen for a long, long time. And he is a player that's coming into his own now. He had a spell at Arsenal, actually, who sold him in the end to Leeds United. And you can see that the talent is there. You can see why they brought him in the first place. On Michael Carrick, I think he deserves a lot of credit for the victory. He, to his credit, has given a lot of the praise to his fellow coaches, Woodgate and Aaron Danks, for kind of masterminding the change of plan. They were happy to have Leicester the ball. They kind of went man to man at times on Leicester with Dale Fry on Ian Acho and I think Housen on Dewsbury Hall. So there was a little bit of that going on. They'd worked incredibly hard on what they did without the ball. And that stymied Leicester to a point. And they relied on a moment of magic to win the game. So yeah, Middlesbrough, a little bit like Watford after a slow start, are sort of just creeping up into the kind of positions that you would expect of them.
Yeah, and it was me last week who said, was it disrespectful for Leeds to loan Sam Greenwood to Middlesbrough because they didn't see him as a threat? So
maybe it was a genius move. So, yeah, we'll see.
Turns out people who actually work in football and football coaching know more about it than I do. Who'd have thought?
I mean, if Greenwood scores the winner in the next match, it will turn out to be worth, 4 points? That 4 points could be the difference, couldn't it? So, yeah, maybe not as daft as we accuse them of being.
Right. Legal obligations forced me to label Friday night's game a Lancashire hot pot, I'm afraid. It bubbled
Come
up later.
On.
You have to do it. I don't want to, but you know, as I say, it's an obligation. Liam Lindsay with the last minute winner. So Preston get the points. Brilliant opener from Alan Brown as well here. But Blackburn a little bit unlucky, hit the bar twice, had 22 shots. I mean, is that unlucky or is it wasteful?
They were a bit wasteful. I watched the game. They played some lovely stuff. We know that Blackburn do. They knock it between the lines, weave some really pretty patterns. And yeah, they're easy on the eye. They're just a bit green. This is what we've been saying all season, just a bit green around the edges, bit of naivety. Haven't got that grisliness of a Preston who basically just dug in. They dug in and defended for their lives. I thought Lindsay and Story did great. Some tremendous blocks, particularly early on in the game. The goal, I showed it to my daughter because I was watching, I was doing research for this pod, and she came and sat next to me. And I said, look at this touch from Alan Brown with the outside of his foot. So beautiful diagonal, wasn't it, from Brad Potts. And then the touch with the outside of the foot. She was like, whoa, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try that in today's game. You know, I'm going to try it and, you know, yeah, see what happens. I don't think she did, but it was one of those moments where you think, oh, that is outstanding. So well done to him. Smodic scored again, of course, for Rovers. And then it was Lindsay, wasn't it, that got the winner. She had great desire to get on the end of Whiteman Centre. But yeah, Blackburn at the end of games are terrible, aren't they? The goal record, Matt, last 15 matches, scored one, conceded 11. That's a shocker. Now, what is that down to? Concentration, a lack of fitness, lack of game management, and maybe the manager's substitutions not being the best from Yardell Thomason. And I think in this game, Ryan Lowe nailed his. Jed Evans come on, did well. Frockyar came on, did well. Brady as well. And the Rovers changes didn't really impact. So that's the area for them to work on. The weird thing, Matt, is that between 60 and 75 minutes, haven't conceded one. It's bonkers, isn't it? Mm. It's just that they seem to run out of gas towards the end of matches. But yeah, this was Preston's night, and I wouldn't begrudge them the win because they fought really, really hard and showed some steel. And then in the moments that mattered, they found quality.
Yeah, they're up to fifth. Chantal Thomason probably needs to win his next home derby, bearing in mind Preston put four past them in this fixture last season. And of course, Burnley won the league at Ewood Park last term. That's the kind of thing that sticks with supporters if that becomes a trend. An East Anglia angle in any other business. That's not an easy sentence to say, but both Ipswich and Norwich beat South Welsh Oppo 3-2. Ipswich are home to Swansea. Canaries at Cardiff. Really significant, these two results, aren't they? Because Ipswich is a good response to the wobble that we've been talking about. And that Norwich win's probably kept Dave Wagner in work, hasn't it?
Well, it was hard to sack someone, isn't it? When you come back from 2-1 down to win 3-2, especially away from home against a team that have been dynamite on their own patch as well. So, yeah, look, you know, I work on a betting podcast, as you know, and it was one of my sort of picks of the week, Cardiff to beat Norwich at home. It felt nailed on. And when they went 2-1 up, I was like, bang, cha-ching. There's no way Norwich are coming back. But they did. And it was Johnny Rowe, again, he's been so good for them. His run and shot that sort of inspired that comeback goal through Adam Eder. So yeah, again, there was a bit, I thought in that game, Plaquetta at left back was a bit of an odd one from David Wagner. And he really struggled against Cardiff down that side. But it's a huge win. And I'd imagine it gives him a stay of execution. I still think he'll get sacked sooner or later. But Ipswich against Swansea, great game, wasn't it? Another one. Portman Road served up some belters, hasn't it? Listen, no wonder they sell out every week. It's they're feasting on real entertainment, aren't they? They've got to stop conceding first. Ipswich, I think that's 5 games in a row now. But what a goal this was from Jack Taylor. Absolute rocket. He's had to sit on his heels, hasn't he? He's been a sub most of this season. Gets a start and bang, sticks one in the top bin. So well done to him. But Ipswich, I do think with Ipswich, the defence needs improvement. I think in January, they might have to invest. You saw for one of the goals, was it Wolfenden, I think, that was really outpaced quite badly by Jamal Lowe. And little things like that, other teams will look at and maybe prey on in the weeks to come. So, but yeah, in East Anglia, it was, all action.
Well, Raphael Varane can't seem to get a start for Man United, so maybe Kieran McKenna can go back to his old club and get him on loan just to get them over the line. Also in the Championship, we've got a new boss. It's Liam Manning. Started life as Bristol City Supremo with a 0-0 away to QPR. So he ditches Oxford last week. They'd taken a punt on him after he'd been sacked by MK Dons. He got them right up League One. I totally get Oxford supporters' annoyance. Mm. But you can also see it from Manning's perspective, right? He's trading up. He's moving up a division. And if he goes, I don't know, 6-8 games without a win at Oxford, then he's looking over his shoulder there. So you have to strike while the iron's hot. We say it all the time, don't we, about managers?
Yeah, I think that any Oxford United supporter that is, you know, really going in heavy on Liam Manning just has to understand the nature of the job. And the nature of a football manager's role is that you've got to keep winning to stay in employment. And the bottom line is this: if you get a chance to go up a division like he has here with Bristol City, I think you have to take it. Unless you know that you're on real safe ground and that you're close to definitely getting promoted yourselves and that you'll take that group into the high level. Because football is brutal. And Oxford United, especially with the ambitions that they've got this season, if they had a sticky run during the second half of this season and tumbled down the table and fell out of even playoff contention, he would be gone. And where does Liam Manning go from mid-table in League One? It's tough. But from Bristol City, it's like a player. Just punch as high as you can, because the only way is down often, and stay as high as you can for as long as you can. I think he had to take this job for the ambition of it. And yeah, Bristol City have got themselves a good gaffer. Oxford will be fine. They'll get someone excellent in place, no doubt about that. But yeah, don't berate Liam Manning. I think in this instance, he's with in his rights to follow, further his ambitions with a move to Bristol City.
All right, so Liam Manning's not in League One anymore, but we're going to go there next. A thumping for Cambridge in their derby with Peterborough. They had the game won by half-time, finished 5-0, meaning Posh stay within touching distance of the automatic promotion places. Cambridge's worst ever result in this fixture, but Posh bouncing back quickly from that defeat at Wigan, and they're really good at home, aren't they? 5 clean sheets in 8 in the league, only one defeat. Always felt like this was going to be a home banker, and boy, that's how it turned out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big game. It was a noon kickoff. You know, there was the fans really don't like each other. Interesting move from the club. I think it was the CEO, Dawn Gore, the CEO, come up with the idea to put Posh fans behind the goal at both ends and to move the Cambridge United fans into the main stand for the game. And I think that's a really smart move, actually, because you're kicking towards your own supporters in both halves. I actually, I do think that might make a slight bit of difference. So that was a good one. And they delivered on the pitch. For me, Peterborough United are actually the best attacking side in League One. You know, they create so many chances, score so many goals. They've got, different combinations that they can play. For instance, Kwame Pocker has been playing as a number 10 lately, and they've moved him to the right. You've got Ephraim Mason-Clark on the left. You had Joel Randall, who's been on the bench, brought back in at 10. Brilliant. And you've got Ricky J. Jones up top at the minute, in for Johnson Clark-Harris. They've got two or three excellent attackers on the bench every week. What a resource that is for Darren Ferguson. No one creates more chances than Peterborough in League One. They're a tremendous set-piece team as well. They pass it brilliantly. I think they made 769 passes in this game. Absolutely mad, isn't it? In League One, you just don't expect it. Ronnie Edwards, the centre-half, 156. I mean, it's not even a Man City player gets that amount of passes per game. So Peterborough United, I think, are maybe the ones going under the radar here. You know, everyone's talking about Pompey and Oxford and Bolton, but Peterborough United by the end of the season won't be far away, because I think they'll score more than they concede against most teams this season.
It won't be far away, but they'll be in the playoffs because it's Peterborough.
top two. I'm going to call it now. I think Peterborough United can get top two this season.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You heard it here first. At the other end of the table, Fleetwood looking up, just a point from safety after swatting aside Exeter. Lee Johnson looking like a great appointment, isn't he? Six unbeaten, easy win here. All the goals in the first half. He's a bit Marmite, isn't he, Johnson? But he's never out of work for long, and that's got to tell you something.
I like him. I unashamedly like him. I know he's a bit partridge at times, but I think he's a really good manager, and he's got a good eye. I think he said, didn't he? He said, when I came in, I knew this team would have goals in them. So he's playing a little bit more of an attacking brand of football. And he's a pretty good motivator, you've got to say. And I'll tell you why his motivation is making an impact here. I'm going to chuck some numbers at you. Not lottery numbers. 2, 3, 13, and 6, Matt. What do you think they represent?
Well, I'm going to say shots that they had in the games before and after he came.
No, it's the minute of their first goal across the last four games. 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 13 minutes, 6 minutes. Fast starts. They don't half help. 8 of their 10 goals that they've scored during this run of four games have been first half goals. So, yeah, it's you've got them pumped ahead of kickoff, which I think makes a heck of a difference. But, yeah, I think it helped them that Exeter are sort of on their knees at the moment. That's 7 defeats from 8, a draw sandwiched in there. That is bad news for Caldwell, that Matt Taylor has just been relieved of his duties at Rotherham, because if I'm the Exeter owner, if I'm the chairman, whoever's in charge of these things, I think I'm getting on the phone to Matt Taylor and saying, would you come back? Because, yeah, ultimately, I think that might be to the benefit of the club moving forwards.
We'll keep an eye on that one. I guess it might depend if Taylor actually moved lock, stock and barrel up to Yorkshire or not. If he's still in Exeter, he might just say, well, that's going to be the easiest thing for me to do. But we shall see. Reading, my goodness me, what a dreadful state they're in. They were 2-0 up against Shrewsbury, ended up losing it late on. Well done to Shrewsbury, first meeting of these two in more than two decades. But is there anybody in the Football League who screams relegation more than Reading do at the moment? And it's absolutely dire stuff for them, isn't it, on and off the pitch?
Yeah, look, in a competition, the EFL, that is littered with awful ownerships, they've got the worst. This Di Young character, it's just the lowest of the low. Absolutely dreadful. And he needs to go. Until he goes, they're going to plummet. They're going to continue to plummet. Ruben Selez made an absolute schoolboy error going there. I don't know what he was thinking. He was in the Premier League, managing Southampton. Almost, he didn't keep him up, but at times, he was quite impressive, wasn't he, on occasion there. Why did he go to Reading? Because I don't know where he goes from here. You know, his reputation will be sullied, no doubt about that. And yeah, I feel like the players are on their knees here. 2-0 up against a team that hadn't scored more than one since mid-August. I think they'd scored 7 all season, Shrewsbury, and they gave up a 2-goal lead. You know, so that is disastrous. Young players, I suppose, defending the box, it's not easy. Shrewsbury, they put a lot of balls into the area and they've got some big guys and that's how they got themselves back into it, really. Strong team, aren't they, Shrewsbury? But yeah, this is an absolute hammer blow for Reading, who look like they're heading to League Two for sure. So yeah, I just hope for Royals fans' sakes that they can find someone, you know, to buy this guy out at the earliest opportunity, because it's head. I actually worry about their future existence at the minute. That's how serious it is.
Oxford, we mentioned them earlier. Liam Manning walked out on the day that they beat Chelsea 5-0 in the Football League Trophy. They followed that with a win at Leyton Orient at the weekend. Feel like probably not enough to get Craig Short the job, seeing as you had that extended period as caretaker last year and they only just about stayed up?
He's not getting it. No, it won't be Craig Short that takes over. I said that there'll be a lot of good managers in the frame for this, and you know, so it's proven. I had a little look at the manager odds, as we probably all do, and Luke Williams, Notts County manager's on there. Dean Holden, you know, very good coach, friend of the show, who yeah, is more than good enough to take that job. He's up there. John Eustace as well, but the favourite, the odds-on favourite, is a guy that I hadn't heard of. Have you? Des Buckingham.
I'm Matt. Just looking now and I'm thinking on the odds checking website that I'm looking at, he doesn't even have a profile picture. So no, never heard of Des Buckingham.
Well, I'll tell you a bit about him. He's 38. He's in charge of Mumbai City at the moment. He's born in Oxford. He was in the Oxford youth team as a keeper. And then he became a coach, and he was a part of Chris Wilder's coaching team back in the day. So he's got a big affiliation with the club. And he went off to New Zealand. And he is a bit of a legend over there. But he's been part of the under-20s, the 23s, even the senior setup. I think he was part of that for a while as a caretaker manager. He's been to Melbourne, Victory, and he's currently at Mumbai City and doing great in pretty much all of those jobs. He's still only 38, remember? So quite a CV. He's also a qualified pilot, which just makes him, you know, an annoyingly talented person, doesn't it, really?
I hate him already, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But this might be the job that tempts him, you know, back to the UK. And, you know, who knows how that would go, but he would be another of this sort of growing band of youthful, modern, ambitious coaches that play football in, you know, that maybe have a different outlook to some of the older guys that are still knocking around on the scene. So, yeah, it's potentially very, very exciting, I think, for Oxford.
Elsewhere in League One, you flagged this one to me. Matt Bloomfield denying that he wanted Wickham's game with Stevenage called off after injuries to two of his team. Two players, Brandon Hanlon and Luke Leahy, both taken to hospital. 26 minutes of added time played here. He said, "I've been told I've been accused of trying to get the game called off, but I can categorically deny that 100%. Interesting one.
Yeah, definitely. Let Steve Evans is stirring the pot. Steve himself actually was pretty dignified because it was a nasty injury, particularly to Leahy. So it was a head injury. I think it was a head injury. He was unconscious. So it's scary, isn't it, in those kind of situations? And I think that he basically made it public that his players told him that Wickham were trying to get the game abandoned. He didn't need to bring that up, but he did. And that's obviously forced Matt into a sort of denial there. I'm sure that he wouldn't have done that anyway. I don't think that's the right thing to do. And I know that he'd be aware of that. And in fairness to Evans, he said that he would have been against that, obviously, as well. Or he would have respected, rather, whatever decision, because you know that those kind of injuries are very, very disturbing and worrying. So he would have respected it, but he got the game done, and thankfully, Leahy and Hanlon are both okay now.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll be back before too long. All right, that was League One. We'll dip into League Two next. Oh, Mansfield, you're going to break my heart again, aren't you? Stags up into the final automatic promotion place after winning at Salford to maintain their unbeaten start to the League Two season. But this was an important victory, not just because it gets them in the top three, Adrian, but because they'd lost their last three matches, which, oddly enough, were all in the Cup. So there's something about League Two which seems to agree with them more than Cup football does.
Yeah, definitely. And you've got to say, even though Mansfield will be really disappointed to have gone out of Cup competitions, doesn't half help their league campaign, the promotion run. So it might be a blessing in disguise. We'll have to wait and see. It's unbelievable, isn't it, that they're still unbeaten. This is a top result. Salford had a really sticky patch, but came through that, and they're playing pretty well at the moment. Salford had all of the ball in the game. Mansfield adapted their tactics because Mansfield aren't a defensive team. We definitely know that about Nigel Clough. He wants to be front foot, but they accepted that the best chance of winning this game might be to be on the back foot and then look to break on them. And that's exactly what they did. What a hero Jordan Bowery is. Former striker turned defender, asked to go up front again for this game and scores. He said it
lovely
was...
Lovely finish as well, wasn't it? Yeah, bent it into the corner beautifully.
He's a good player. What a good all-round footballer, hey? And yeah, he sort of said it was a bit old school being up there alongside Reece Oates. It was like, you know, going back a couple of years, but he delivered. And I was looking at some of the numbers on Mansfield, and I know that you always... Was this the first year you didn't back them to get promoted, Matt? Can I just clarify that, right?
My fingers have been burnt too many times.
Yeah, and you might get your fingers burnt again because the data tells you that they are a very, very good team. They've had 44 more shots from open play than Wrexham. They've had 58 more than Stockport, who win every game. And they've had 59 more shots from open play than Notts County. They've scored less than all of those three teams. So which tells you, create for fun, but not nowhere near as clinical or ruthless as some of the other teams around them. you would expect that to maybe improve. And obviously, in Davis Keeler Dunn, they've got one of the players of the season. You know, his numbers are just incredible. And then I looked at it the other way in terms of like expected goals against in open play. I think that's a great gauge, especially in open play, of how you keep teams away from your goal and deny them quality chances. Well, they've got the second best record in that department as well, just narrowly behind Stockport. So they, you know, they defend well, they press high. And so, yeah, everything is going really well for Mansfield. Yeah, you wonder when they'll blow up this year, but maybe it might not just happen.
Just ahead of Crewe on goal difference there. Next game at the weekend is at home to Newport County. Right, since last we spoke, Stephen Clements got the gig at Gillingham. His first league game ended in defeat. His new Chargers went down 2-0 at Wrexham. No Mullen, no McLean, no beard for Ollie Palmer, no problem for Wrexham. What do you make of this appointment? It's a tough first league game, isn't it? So I can't really judge him too much on that. But it's an interesting one. It comes with the caveat that the American owners hope that he will entertain and win at the same time. I feel like football supporters are more concerned with the latter than they are the former, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'd like to know from our listeners, you know, where entertainment comes on the scale of importance, because I'm hearing it all the time from CEOs, chairmen, owners, and I get it, because they want people to come and watch. They want them to pay 20 quid, 25 quid, 30 quid, whatever it costs, to come in to the ground and watch their team. And they know that an entertaining brand of football, an attacking brand of football, is more likely to get bums on seats. Commercially, it makes total sense to go for that style. But football is not won solely by teams that play that way. And a lot of attacking sides get relegated and they struggle because they don't have the players to perform it better, you know, to perform it as well as others. So I think it's dangerous when you hear hierarchy talk about that. The winning bit is always more important, surely. But look, let us know. Let us know on the pod. You can, you know, tweet us, email in or whatever at What the EFL or at EFL What the on Twitter, at What the EFL on Instagram and TikTok. Yeah, surely winning comes above entertainment. But look, I wish that Stephen Clements well. He worked a lot with Steve Bruce, didn't he, for years and years.
He recommended him, apparently. Former yeah. Gillingham man, of course, isn't he, Bruce?
That's it. Yeah, I wonder what the connection is. Obviously, Clements is a London boy, isn't he? Brought up at Tottenham. So he's sort of coming home to a degree. Look, brought up at Spurs, playing, you know, good entertaining brand of football. Bruce's teams were a bit more attritional, weren't they? So yeah, maybe that would make him a really sort of varied head coach potentially. So we wish him the best of luck. This was tough start for him. One down after 57 seconds as well. Graham Alexander suffered the same fate at Bradford, didn't he? Conceded in the first minute at home to Barrow. So yeah, now well played, Wrexham. They're ticking along beautifully, aren't they? Don't need the ball. Well, they have a bit of it, obviously. I think they average just under 48%, but they're not possession-based. Just really well organised in that 3-5-2. And I think they've got a nice balanced style of play, actually. It's not just about long passes. They can keep it as well. And after that wild, crazy start to the season, they're sensible now, aren't they? They've had 10 games since the start of October. They're unbeaten in all of those 10. They've only conceded 6 goals during that run. And when you consider they conceded 5 on the opening day, that ain't bad, is it? That's quite some improvement from Wrexham. So I'd imagine they're thrilled with Phil Parkinson and the job that he's doing.
Yeah, just on the entertainment thing. Now, I support a team in Forest who quite regularly have about 30% of the ball in their home games, and the stadium's sold out every week, and only Manchester City and Liverpool have got better home records in the Premier League over the last year. So it all comes down to results. That's how football works.
And being defensive is not a dirty word in football. And I think that's what some people forget. You know, you've got to be sensible, but as long as you can then explode into life and create chances.
And that's really thrilling, watching a counter-attacking team, right? When it's your team that are hitting somebody on the break and everybody gets up on their feet and cheers, that's just as entertaining as watching beautiful passing football.
Yeah, exactly. I think the type of football fans don't like watching is long ball stuff, where it's really direct and, you know, it's about the second balls and whatnot. But, you know, even then, if you're winning, you know, people will come. People will come and pay their money to see a winning team more than a side that, that has 700 passes but can't score. So, yeah, I don't subscribe to that theory at all.
Other stuff that happened in League Two, that was a weird old game between Crewe and Notts County, wasn't it? The referee went off injured. Loads of stoppage time as a result of that. Crewe won it late on, and there was a bit of a skirmish involving the county fans and the referee's assistant.
Yeah, well, what happened, from what I believe, is that the award of the winning goal, the penalty, I mean, it was harsh, in my opinion. I think that the Crewe were lucky there. It was, you know, it's point blank range, just blasted at him. For me, it was never a penalty. So I can understand why the Notts County fans were so irate. They'd already had the ref had been subbed off. So this was the sub ref that gave that decision. So they were down to just the two linesmen and the assistants. And I think that there were some projectiles, you know, lobbed onto the pitch, which isn't very good. But there was a lot of abuse being dished out. And basically they refused to carry on, the assistant. And then what was quite funny is that they asked the guy on the other side of the pitch if he'd swap, and he said no. So, but I mean, it isn't funny because you know, fans shouldn't behave that way. But yeah, I don't really know what to make of it. I'm kind of on the fence a little bit, but very, very unusual situation there.
You mentioned Graham Alexander, so he's got the Bradford job. Started with a 2-1 defeat at home to Barrow, who are up in the playoff places. Good on them, but slightly surprised about this appointment. We thought maybe MK were a bit harsh in getting rid of Graham Alexander, or maybe a bit quick to do so. He's fallen on his feet, hasn't he, getting the Bradford job?
He kind of always does, doesn't he? He always falls on his feet, Graham Alexander. I actually do rate him. I think the job that he did at Salford in particular was great. But previously, you know, earlier on in his career, he got a decent CV. But yeah, he has been sacked quite a lot in recent times and then bounced back immediately. He must be very, very good at interviews, that's all I can say. He was a good fullback. I remember playing against him a few times during my playing career, and he was one of those awkward ones to get around. You know, he was a tough player. But yeah, look, it's not an easy gig at Bradford. Expectations are obviously massive there. One thing he has got over his predecessor, Mark Hughes, is a real knowledge of that level. And he will know the types of players that can improve that team. So I'd expect them to be busy in January for sure, Bradford City. I think there'll be quite a lot of outs and plenty of ins. And it wouldn't surprise me if they did launch a bit of a rally in the second half of the season under him. But yeah, it's a lot of managers probably wouldn't touch that job because it's a bit of a poison chalice. A lot of really good coaches have gone in there and not done anything. So yeah, maybe if he fails here, that you know, that might mean a drop down into the National League potentially for him as a head coach. But look, let's be positive and wish him well. And look, if he can get things going at Bradford, what a gig that is. You know, massive stadium, huge fan base, no better feeling I would imagine than winning games there at Bradford City. So yeah, hopefully for them and for him, that's what happens.
And finally, we ought to give a mention to Stockport because they won 13 games in a row in all competitions. They did it the hard way at Swindon, but they're building up a nice little buffer, aren't they? What is it now? 6 points between them and Crewe in fourth. Going to take some stopping from this point.
Yeah, it will. But the thing that they'll be talking about internally there is the threat of others. You've got some really good teams up there. We've bigged up Mansfield. They're not the only ones. We've talked about Wrexham. Everyone thinks they're going to go up. Well, Notts County think they're going up as well. And there are some decent teams knocking around at that in and around the playoffs as well. So I don't think anything is nailed on because of the quality of the teams that are at the higher end there. But yeah, this is some run. 13 wins on the spin. Unbelievable. And yeah, they're starting to get some players back, aren't they? I see Wootton's back scoring goals now. And Odin Bailey scored probably the pick of the bunch in this one, curling one in. Swindon, who conceded 7 against Aldershot previously and 4 this time around. A bit of pressure on Mike Flynn, I'd imagine.
Yeah, just what, a week or so after he signed that new contract, which he's probably very, very relieved that he did. All right, we are about out of time. Of course, I do have a tweet for Adrian to run the rule of. It comes courtesy of Ken Semmer, the Watford player, at Semmer Ken. Great game and great win. Well done, lads, exclamation mark. This was for you, Hornets. emoji, 2 A emojis for his 2 assists. See you after the break. Hashtag KS12 and 2 pictures of him playing in the game. The reason this stood out to me was that last bit, Clarkie. He's hashtagged his initials and squad number. And for me, that's a hard no. You can't be doing that, Kenny. He took the world by storm, didn't he, last year when he did that interview? You know, he's got the speech impediment and it was really inspiring to see him do that. Great. But all that kudos has been wiped out by hashtag KS12 for me.
He could have gone hashtag King Ken, because that's what they call him there. How would that have, you know, if it had gone hashtag King Ken, would that have been even worse for you?
Well, I wouldn't have minded that. Yeah, sort of would have been worse. The first reply from Cy Paris is actually Ken Semmer's face imposed onto the body of a king.
Oh, yeah.
With King Ken Reign Supreme again.
That's brilliant. That's the real tweet of the week. That's tremendous. Look, he's done it at, 9:20 on Saturday night. Maybe he's had a couple of beers, I don't know. Grammatically not great. Obviously, he's gone capital G at the start, which is fine, and then gone again with a capital G on great, which is poor. Again, well done, lads. Just tell the lads, don't tweet the lads. he's kind of got the context wrong there. But I like the hornet emoji. I like the AA for the double assist. I think that's smart. But yeah, hashtag KS12. He's just trying to drum it up. I quite like it. He's a hard player to dislike, Ken Semmer, because like you say, he's a bit of a trailblazer with his speech impediment, and no one has a bad word to say about him down at Vicarage Road. He's a real, I don't know if he's a hero or a cult hero, but he's somewhere in between. They absolutely adore him. So I'm not going to hammer him. That's a decent tweet for me, even though obvious grammatical errors.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the top tweets when you search the hashtag KS12, and they're all from him. So it's not catching on the way that he wanted.
I mean, I reckon if I was to do a hashtag for What the EFL, that is a similar tumbleweed would occur. So, yeah, look, he might be great at football, but when it comes to drumming up, you know, viral social media posts, bit of work to do, isn't it?
Work to do. All right. That is just about it from me and hashtag AC29.
That's the one. Yeah.
You know, a reminder of the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of the pod. 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, we'll be back to full strength when we reconvene, same time next week. Join us for that if you can. For now, though, it is goodbye.